The smallest of the women dropped to a curtsy when the bus drew up. The other two just stared. They were sharing a cigarette, and they smoked it down to the filter before one of them stubbed it out against a root. Chernabog opened the back of the bus, and the biggest of the women pushed past him, and easily, as if it were a sack of flour, she lifted Wednesday's body out of the back and carried it to the tree. She laid it in front of the tree, put it down about 10 feet from the trunk. She and her sisters unwrapped Wednesday's body. He looked worse by daylight than he had by candlelight in the motel room, and after one quick glance, Shadow looked away. The women arranged his clothes, tidied his suit, then placed him at the corner of the sheet and wound it around him once more. Then the women came over to Shadow.
"You are the one?"
the biggest of them asked.
"The one who will mourn the All-Father?"
asked the middle-sized one.
"You have chosen to take the vigil?"
asked the smallest. Shadow nodded. Afterward, he was unable to remember whether he had actually heard their voices. Perhaps he had simply understood what they had meant from their looks and their eyes. Mr. Nancy, who had gone back to the house to use the bathroom, came walking back to the tree. He was smoking a cigarillo. He looked thoughtful.
"Shadow, you really don't have to do this. We can find somebody more suited. You ain't ready for this."
"I'm doing it."
"You don't have to. You don't know what you're letting yourself in for."
"Doesn't matter."
"And if you die? If it kills you?"
"Then it kills me."
Mr. Nancy flicked his cigarillo into the meadow angrily.
"I said you had shit for brains, and you still have shit for brains. Can't see when someone's trying to give you an out?"
"I'm sorry."
He didn't say anything else. Nancy walked back to the bus. Chernabog walked over to Shadow. He did not look pleased.
"You must come through this alive,"
he said.
"Come through this safely, for me."
And then he tapped his knuckle gently against Shadow's forehead and said,
"Bem."
He squeezed Shadow's shoulder, patted his arm, and walked back to the bus. The biggest woman, whose name seemed to be Eartha or Erder, Shadow could not repeat it back to her to her satisfaction, told him in pantomime to take off his clothes.
"All of them?"
The big woman shrugged. Shadow stripped to his briefs and t-shirt. The women propped the ladders against the tree. One of the ladders, it was painted by hand with little flowers and leaves twining up the struts, they pointed out to him. He climbed the 9 steps. Then, at their urging, he stepped onto a low branch. The middle woman tipped out the contents of the sack onto the meadow grass. It was filled with a tangle of thin ropes, brown with age and dirt, and the woman began to sort them out into lengths and to lay them carefully on the ground beside Wednesday's body. They climbed their own ladders now, and they began to knot the ropes, intricate and elegant knots, and they wrapped the ropes first about the tree and then about Shadow. Unembarrassed, like midwives or nurses or those who lay out corpses, they removed his t-shirt and briefs, then they bound him, never tightly, but firmly and finally. He was amazed at how comfortably the ropes and the knots bore his weight. The ropes went under his arms, between his legs, around his waist, his ankles, his chest, binding him to the tree. The final rope was tied loosely about his neck. It was initially uncomfortable, but his weight was well distributed, and none of the ropes cut his flesh. His feet were 5 feet above the ground. The tree was leafless and huge, its branches black against the gray sky, its bark a smooth, silvery gray. They took the ladders away. There was a moment of panic as he dropped a few inches, as all his weight was taken by the ropes. He made no sound. He was entirely naked by that point. The women placed the body, wrapped in its motel sheet shroud, at the foot of the tree, and they left him there. They left him there alone. Chapter 15. Hang me, oh hang me, and I'll be dead and gone. Hang me, oh hang me, and I'll be dead and gone. I wouldn't mind the hangin', it's being gone so long. It's lying in the grave so long. Old song. The first day that Shadow hung from the tree, he experienced only discomfort that edged slowly into pain and fear, and, occasionally, an emotion that was somewhere between boredom and apathy. a gray acceptance, waiting. He hung. The wind was still. After several hours, fleeting bursts of color started to explode across his vision in blossoms of crimson and gold, throbbing and pulsing with a life of their own. The pain in his arms and legs became, by degrees, intolerable. If he relaxed them, let his body go slack and dangle. If he flopped forward, then the rope around his neck would take up the slack and the world would shimmer and swim. So he pushed himself back against the trunk of the tree. He could feel his heart laboring in his chest, a pounding, arrhythmic tattoo as it pumped the blood through his body. Emeralds and sapphires and rubies crystallized and burst in front of his eyes. His breath came in shallow gulps. The bark of the tree was rough against his back. The chill of the afternoon on his naked skin made him shiver, made his flesh prickle and goose.
"It's easy," said someone in the back of his head. "There's a trick to it. Either you do it, or you die."
It was a wise thing to have thought, he decided. He was pleased with it and repeated it over and over in the back of his head, part mantra, part nursery rhyme, rattling along to the drumbeat of his heart.
"It's easy, there's a trick to it. You do it or you die. It's easy, there's a trick to it. You do it or you die. It's easy, there's a trick to it. You do it or you die. It's easy, there's a trick to it. You do it or you die."
Time passed. The chanting continued. He could hear it. Someone was repeating the words, only stopping when Shadow's mouth began to dry out, when his tongue turned dry and skin-like in his mouth. He pushed himself up and away from the tree with his feet, trying to support his weight in a way that would still allow him to fill his lungs. He breathed until he could hold himself up no more, and then he fell back into the bonds and hung from the tree. When the chattering started, an angry, laughing, chattering noise, he closed his mouth, concerned that it was he himself making it. But the noise continued.
"It's the world laughing at me, then,"
thought Shadow. His head lolled to one side. Something ran down the tree trunk beside him, stopping beside his head. It chittered loudly in his ear, one word which sounded a lot like ratatosk. Shadow tried to repeat it, but his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. He turned slowly and stared into the gray-brown face and pointed ears of a squirrel. In close-up, he learned a squirrel looks a lot less cute than it does from a distance. The creature was rat-like and dangerous, not sweet or charming, and its teeth looked sharp. He hoped that it would not perceive him as a threat or as a food source. He did not think that squirrels were carnivorous, but then so many things he had not thought had turned out to be so. He slept. The pain woke him several times in the next few hours. It pulled him from a dark dream in which dead children rose and came to him, their eyes peeling, swollen pearls, and they reproached him for failing them, and it pulled him from another dream in which he was staring up at a mammoth, hairy and dark, as it lumbered toward him from the mist, but... Awake for a moment, a spider edging across his face, and he shook his head, dislodging or frightening it. Now the mammoth was an elephant-headed man, pot-bellied, one tusk broken, and he was riding toward Shadow on the back of a huge mouse. The elephant-headed man curled his trunk toward Shadow and said,
"If you had invoked me before you began this journey, perhaps some of your troubles might have been avoided."
Then the elephant took the mouse, which had, by some means that Shadow could not perceive, become tiny, while not changing in size at all, and passed it from hand to hand to hand, fingers curling about it as the little brown creature scampered from palm to palm. And Shadow was not at all surprised when the elephant-headed god finally opened all four of his hands to reveal them perfectly empty. He shrugged arm after arm after arm in a peculiar fluid motion, and looked at Shadow, his face unreadable.
"It's in the trunk,"
Shadow told the elephant man, who had seen the flickering tail vanish. The elephant man nodded his huge head and said,
"Yes, in the trunk. You will forget many things. You will give many things away. You will lose many things. But do not lose this."
And then the rains began, and Shadow was awake once more. He tumbled, shivering and wet, from deep sleep to wakefulness in moments. The shivering intensified until it scared Shadow. He was shivering more violently than he had ever imagined possible, a series of convulsive shudders which built upon each other